Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Tuesday, February 27th. My name is Magnus Tiewald. I'm your host for today. And today we'll be bringing you part two of our special three-part series, The Seventh Artists on Radio, created in collaboration with the Orr Gallery. Also later in the program, Ayu Sakamoto will be coming up to bring her review of a recent classical music event. 2 weeks ago, we had a feature interview with cellist Spanish cellist Loretta that Ayu conducted, and she went to the event, and she's going to come back and give us her thoughts on that. That'll be coming up around 10:45. First, though, we have our feature for today, part two of the series, The Seventh Artists on Radio. This is a talk with artists Laura Brevner and James Harry, who are in conversation with Rick Harry, Cease Weiss, and Aaron Nelson Moody. The conversation is moderated by Orr Gallery Director Jen Jackson. Together, the artists discuss Coast Salish design principles and intersectional collaboration as it relates to Lauren Brevner and James Harry's exhibition, The Seventh, which was at the Orr Gallery this fall and winter. So here is our presentation, part two of The Seventh. And we will be bringing part three of this discussion on Thursday morning at 10 o'clock. Don't forget, Ayu Sakamoto is going to be here after this at about 10:45, so please enjoy.
But also our commitment to support the capacity of art to unsettle these conditions. We would like to welcome each of you to this really special panel today. And I'm very grateful for the vision of Jen Jackson, the Orr Gallery Director, in creating this partnership for our program today. Now I'll welcome Jen Jackson to speak. Thank you. Thank you for joining us on this beautiful afternoon for the seventh panel conversation on Coast Salish design principles in intersectional collaboration with artists James McCullis, Willacton Harry, Willacton Rick Harry, Tightsnut Cease Weiss will be joining us shortly, and Aaron Nelson Moody, also known as Splash, our wonderful colleague and friend, artist Lauren Brevner, and the star of the show, Baby Hannah, are unable to join us today as they are under the weather. I am Jen Jackson, my pronouns are she, her. I am the director at Orr Gallery and the curator of the Seven. It is an honor to be here today and to welcome stories of the land from our esteemed panelists. The stories that will be shared this afternoon offer an active and ongoing acknowledgement that the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples and territories are timeless, that the rich and culturally diverse descendants of this territory are always in dialogue with the Hunkaminos and Squamish voices that echo upon the land. Today, artists will discuss Coast Salish design principles and intersectional collaboration as it relates to Lauren and James' exhibition 7 on view at Orr Gallery until February 10, 2024. Together, they will discuss the exhibition's principles of Indigenous representation and land-based gestures in contemporary art. The conversation that we will share today acknowledges calls for Indigenous sovereignty across and in solidarity with communities near and far. It offers an opening for discussion on the ways that we can stand with each other and direct our voices to powerful change. It is an honor and a pleasure for me to welcome a conversation between James, Wallaston, Cease, and Splash. I'll share a little bit about each of them and introduce them to you. We'll start with him. Internationally recognized Squamish artist Wallaston Osbisi was born and raised in Squamish, and carries with him the rich ancestry of his father, Squamish Nation, and mother, Kwakwaka'wakw Nation. He was given his indigenous name by his father, Kulton, who was a hereditary chief originally from the Seymour Creek area in North Vancouver. Wallaston attended Emily Carr University and Capilano College, and credits both with helping him acquire skills and starting his career. His endurance and deep commitment to community has propelled his practice as an artist. He has received numerous honors and awards, including an honorary doctorate from Emily Carr University, the BC Achievement Foundation Award of Distinction for Lifetime Achievement, the Queen Elizabeth Diamond Jubilee Medal, and the Order of British Columbia. Healing growth and raising awareness of the environment are central themes in Wallaston's work. His focus on traditional stories and lived experiences uphold the ways that ancient knowledge can be called upon to heal individuals and communities. Aaron Nelson Moody, he, him. Artist, educator, and traditional storyteller, Aaron Nelson Moody, also known as Splash, I'll call you Splash for this talk, is a member of the Squamish First Nation who lives and works in Capilano Village on the North Shore of Vancouver. His practice engages Coast Salish cultural revival through knowledge sharing and traditional intercultural connection. Nelson Moody has spent several decades working in regional schools and with local community groups on projects that engage Indigenous representation and visual sovereignty. He currently works as an instructor in the Department of Fine Arts at Lanihara College, where he teaches Indigenous wood carving and principles of public art. Nelson Moody's Squamish name, Tossin Yakwala, means splashing eagle. According to stories, he was given the name after a canoe trip down the BC coast from Bella Bella, where his unique paddling style frequently soaked the paddlers sitting just behind him. The nickname stuck, and to this day, most people just call him Splash. Toys to Nutsy's wife, hello, Cease. Is a Squamish, Solo, Hawaiian, and Swiss educator, interdisciplinary artist, Indigenous ethnobotanist, and food security activist, engaged in community-based teaching and sharing. Weiss's 30-year practice connects storytelling and collaborative initiatives through restoration of Indigenous plants and natural species spaces. Weiss has been recognized for exchanging traditional knowledges and remediating relationships to land alongside themes of site-specific engagement, language revitalization, digital media, and weaving. Weiss has participated and exhibited at galleries, museums, festivals, and public spaces such as Vancouver Art Gallery, Morris Helen Belkin Art Gallery, Contemporary Art Gallery, and the Push Festival. Their work can be found in various collections such as the National Library of Canada, special collections at the Walter Phillips Gallery, the Banff Centre, and Vancouver Public Library. Since 2019, they have led the transformation of Oshway, New Growth, an urban Indigenous garden located in Vancouver, BC. They have received numerous honors and awards, including an honorary doctorate from Emily Carr University, City of Vancouver Artist Studio Award, the City of Vancouver Mayor's Arts Award for Film and New Media. So welcome, Wallaston, James, Splash, and C. cease. I'll come sit down with you, and maybe Wellacton, we can start with you and hear more about your work with community and the ways that you work with community on healing and growth and education as part of your artistic practice, and the ways that you share traditional stories and lived experience through mentorship. And I see that you've brought some wonderful examples of your work, so I'll hand the floor over to you.
I got to talk and stick down. So when anybody holds the stick, I have the floor, no one else can speak. Yeah, it's been a good journey for me. Started to do artwork at the age of 5, and I was inspired by my older brother. My older brother was probably grade 7 at the time. And I saw his work, and I said, wow, I want to be able to do that. So I got down and I started drawing. This young man here, he was 5'2", and all was there standing there watching me. And I was thinking of myself at that age, wow, he was very interested. I sent him a picture of himself really watching me doing some work. And he just kind of allowed them to happen, be part of it. Be part of it, then it grows from there. It's and then like that with community. I let people participate in the project. And even if they took a few chips of wood off, I said, now you go tell people you carved this. I got my permission, you carved it. Even though the thing's 30 feet long. Little shaving, come on. You carved that one. Or even get community involved, like this recent one here. When I was laying down, I shared with the little ones. This was being carved at Whistler last summer. Any little child would come along, I said, sit in the canoe. Sit in it. And I had some little paddles carved too. Hold on to the paddle. Because when you become an adult, you're going to share with your family, your little ones, that you sat in that canoe. Because this canoe is going to stand, or this whole piece will stand for probably 60 to 100 years. And this, it could help educate all those little ones. And it tells the background of who we are, where we're from, how we can carry ourselves, what can we leave behind for the ones that aren't here yet. Right, so there's a lot of information here to help one grow in a good way. And his little brother, Stanley, he's learned the Squamish language. And it talks, and when they learn every morning, they say these words, that we all come from good people. We need to carry ourselves in a good way, respect one another, respect our teachers, respect ourselves, respect their environment. So there's a lot of teaching there, and that's what this is all about. And so we involve community, because this was like our written language, right? Whenever we had gatherings or feasts, when I got married, I didn't ask for gifts. I gave gifts. Gave out prints, gave out jewelry, gave out glass. So when those people pick those pieces up, they're going to remember what happened that time. And so we were more like what was traditional feast way. This one was based on our hereditary chiefs. Because really, our hereditary chiefs don't carry that power. We need to give them back that power. Because it'll bring our community back to balance, and our family back to balance. Because that's what that canoe represents here, is balance. The spindle whorl here represents the female part. So it's our balance. It's right in the middle of the canoe, but it's also in the middle of this whole bowl to symbolize our balance. That's our strength. And some people might call it a totem pole, but I left it blocked off here to represent house posts. We didn't carve totem poles, like we mentioned. No totem poles, they were house posts that were held up our home. Okay, that's where we got our strength from, was our home. So we got the bear to symbolize the power and the strength. This is to represent the hereditary chief up here, But that didn't mean they were greater than us. They were just as equal as us. They would treat us the same. And then the sound of people. But actually, when this piece was lit, it surprised me. There's a serpent showing. When the light hits it, appeared right around this area, there's a serpent facing us. And the serpent, there's a lot of stories behind the devil, but the serpent, which helps us get our strength. What can we, if there's something wrong, how can we overcome it? We're going to find our balance, our strengths. And then you have eyes on each side to remind us that we're all being watched. So, you know, to learn from ourselves, if we're being taught or being watched all the time, we're going to carry ourselves in a better way. We're being watched by the Creator, our ancestors, community, family, friends, and our conscience, ourself. That's what these Salish eyes also can represent, being watched all the time. So, better behave. Spread it further, like we've been to Scotland, carved 34 poles in Scotland, and we kind of reversed it. After I raised all those poles up in Scotland, it's no longer called Scotland. It's now called Scotch-mish. Newfound territory, he said. Newfound territory. Yeah. So, I mean, we're just having fun with that, you know, we talked about it. And, you know, while we're carving over there, one of the elderly ladies, she came over and sat beside me. She says, while we're carving this toll in her community, she says, these don't belong here. We say, yeah, okay. I let her go off and let her finish talking. And I says, do you mind, I'm going to share why I'm here now. Is that okay? She says, yeah. So I shared with her why we were here, to build a community, to learn about one another. And she also realized, she's starting to get to know some of her own community members because we were building something, carving something together. And she came every day after that, and she was helped carve it. She was like 83 or something at that time. And like how the trees look after her elders. She'd been coming to lunch, I said, come eat with us. Because they, you know, they were feeding us. No, no, I can't eat with you guys. That's your guys' food. No, 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 we look after them. You come eat with us. So she came and ate with us. So, you know, we've got to treat one another like equal and be friendly and be very open. And we joke. We play around because in our culture, we tease one another. Mm-hmm. Right? So I stood over one of the, because we're all carving different pieces in a place called Strathcon. One guy, you know, he's a real great carver. I stood over his carving and go like this. I knew he was watching me. And he was getting offensive about me. And I looked at him and said, no, no, I'm just easing you. Yeah, so I just made it look like it seemed it was balanced. Yeah, I always include people when I'm doing projects, you know, like, if you stand around too long, yeah, I'm going to put you to work. I said, well, excuse me, do you mind if I interrupt? I'm here to be interrupted, that's why I'm here. But I can say for Salish art, I started thinking about Salish art when I was on this journey to, it's called Sacred Run Across Canada. Russell Means and Dennis Banks, these guys were American Indian Movement guys that started at Wounded Knee. They went through a lot of hard times there. So as I was on that journey, I came across Charles Elliott's work. He's in, on the island, Vancouver Island. And he did Coast Salish art. I saw him on the bill and I said, oh, I like that. I'm gonna have to get more into that. So, you know, I was inspired. Right? So, along with that, I started just bringing up, we need to start doing more Salish design. Because when it comes down to our identity, that's who I am. When I was in grade 10, one of my elders says, you guys aren't proud of who you are. Because we're all our Indigenous kids, we were in the classroom talking to us. I don't see you guys wearing anything that's Native, he said. I looked at everybody, he said, yeah, that's right. So I went home, got a book. It said Indian Cross. It's more like for the plains, so I'll start doing stuff like Plain Natives. I start making these necklaces and stuff and show them who I am. And one time I was walking down Gravel Street, this guy, he says, hey, brother, are you Lakota? Lakota, no. He says, well, what you're wearing, that tells me who you are. So now I have to think about that again. Then I started coming up with some more design work about who I was, actually. So that's why we're really focused on this, on this land, but more focused on Coast Sailor's design. And it's pretty awesome to learn about. Even for me, I didn't learn about it as a child, right? I had to grow into it and learn about it. This guy here, he's a better speaker than me. And the reason is, I graduated from a college. He graduated from a university. That's all I say, anybody's a better talker.
Thank you, Lactan, for sharing. Hearing Lactan talk makes me think about your decades-long commitments to community and the importance of community-based research and teachings and the ways that you work together with youth on the land and in the land in a way that is quite different than what James was sharing in terms of permanent works on the site, but also have these very permanent impacts and long-term impacts with youth. And I thought it would be nice to hear a little bit from you on that work. And I was reflecting recently on a talk that you did with James at Van Dusen Gardens, and you said something that really struck me, and I'm sure that you've said it many times, but in that instance it stayed with me, about the way that the land will teach us or let us know. I'll be going to you.
Thanks, Kat. So many places in our territory have taught me that, like the Elaho Valley, which is actually how I really got to know Splashmore, because we both ended up there quite a bit in the mountains trying to make sure that work was being done right. And I really listened to the speakers of our nation and also from other places that came to talk about the land and saving it. And it just kept really hitting me in such a meaningful way how everything I heard people say was how much the land was teaching us. In places I've gone, one year I went to Northern California to visit a friend. She's an herbalist like me, ethnobotanist, and she's actually one of my very formative teachers in traditional medicines. And the odd thing is, I started out learning about traditional medicines, but I couldn't find people in our community, and it was a mix of people still decolonizing and saying that we can talk about it. But my paths took me in different directions, and two different Mohawk women from different places came into my life. And when I went to visit this woman, there was a flood, and then the flood went down, and then she's like, let's go walk. I gotta see the land. She's like, the river's different. Everywhere she took me, like, it's all new to me, because I've never been here, so it's what it is. But for her, I really listened to the things she was saying and how the river, when it went up and came down, how it changed and transformed things in a different way. And it really made me think about our people and when we had our big flood, and how that must have been so impacting to our people at the time, because so many places were, so all of our villages were flooded. And to have all of them flooded at the same time, and then that water subsided. And over the years, I keep hearing stories from different community members about their family stories of the flood must be coming out through them, I guess, because they say different things. And then I started working on building this community garden very close to Palafkin's place. And over the 15 years I've been there, that land has been teaching me so much, and it changes every year, and then I'll grow something, it won't grow. I'll try for, for 10 years to grow a calendula, and it's like, no, I'm not growing for you. I'm like, but I love you. Please grow. And then I started to see that plants would just appear, and I was like, okay, I gotta wait for what wants to grow here. I gotta follow that, and I have to have patience, and I have to have love and understanding, and not be judgmental. But you're not the plant I wanted. Not about to say that. So, and I started to share that teaching with people because that's what I was observing, and I just really saw people transform on that land, but also when they brought themselves back to the land. And I think even those of us that feel very connected, there's still parts of us, because we live in a very colonial world now, that we have to find the ways to stay connected and to let the land keep teaching us and let the land help us understand how we can coexist better. And you know, I think about the ancient teachings that I hear from so many elders, and about how in the long ago, all these things that that happened were all about, and you know, natural disasters would happen, and the people would have to respond. And they couldn't phone each other, I mean, not on a phone, but we could give messages. This is where the water is so important, and our drums. We could actually sing a song that had a meaning that somebody would understand. They could hear it on the water, it would travel. And I would think about those things, about how, you know, we're given the gifts as humans because we're supposed to be the smartest creatures on the planet, but we're not very good at being kind. At least, you know, some of us aren't very good at it, and some of us are very good at it, is what I want to say, because we wouldn't still have all the resources we have if the people from our ancestors didn't see and understand how to keep protecting what we had. And despite these natural disasters, we've survived and we've thrived. And so, you know, when we come to these stories, like what Palakton was sharing about the predatory chiefs, and, you know, we're in a time right now where people are in a cancel culture, and where they want to cancel things out. And some people in our community are doing that, and they're trying to say, well, what did the hereditary chiefs ever do? And I was like, well, all the stories I've heard of the people that became the first chiefs saved our people during natural disasters. And so that really touched my heart when you were talking about, because that's why we have to really look at our ancient teachings, and that's why we have to really bring that back to today, where we have to really understand what we're honoring. And, you know, we have to listen to the young ones, but we also really have to listen to the old ones. And those of us in between are the ones that have to do that work to keep them connected. And I think, and that leads me into, like, the work I do with youth, where I just, for whatever reason, I just understood, you know, and I think my late 20s, I started to understand that the work that was coming my way was all with young people. And I didn't, and part of me just didn't feel worthy of it. And then I was like, okay, well, now I just don't have work, so I'll just do it. And then I started to, you know, realize that being worthy of something is about working towards it. And it's like, you know, becoming a master carver. You can't just carve something and you're like, I'm a master carver now. And you have to put that time in, and I've listened to young people that have listened to the masters, and they understand that you can't just become a master carver. And I've also talked with, you know, weavers, and actually Halactan's sister is my mentor, and I work with her at Suecia. And I just love how much I learned about love from her and from Alexa.